Across federal agencies, you're going to find agreement that sharing information can make everyone smarter, improve mission delivery, and boost transparency. But you'll also find agreement that information sharing can increase the threat to privacy. Some recent events have intensified the need to balance sharing with privacy. For example, the Office of Personnel Management has announced plans for a database that will track cost and quality of service under the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. But that system also collects names and social security numbers and employment details.
So finding the right balance between privacy and sharing is the subject of today's Federal News Radio discussion. Joining us are Hannah Bergman, Assistant General Counsel at the National Archives and Records Administration, and William Saunders, Deputy Director for the Office of Information Services at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you in studio with us today. So why don't we get right to the heart of the matter? Why don't we start with you, Mr. Saunders. What is your agency's overall guiding principle when it comes to privacy?
Well, I think balance would be a good word. We're balancing the interests of privacy with, as you said, the value of our data for a lot of purposes.
Okay, and so what does that mean operationally? What does that mean for you and how you do things?
It means that we recognize that there is often a legitimate need to release information, but we try to make sure that it's the minimal necessary information needed for that purpose.
Okay, and Ms. Bergman, you're at NARA. I mean, that's kind of the heart of the whole thing. So what's the guiding principle on release and transparency and privacy?
Well, I think at the National Archives, we have a little bit of a different mission than most federal agencies in that we take in records with the express intent of making them available to the public at some point. So we think about privacy in a lot of different ways, and we try and balance the interest, the privacy interest of the individuals whose information is in the records, our employees. In different ways, in different contexts, we break it out into our archival holdings. We think about privacy very differently in archival records than we think about it in our operational files. And we really try and do the right calculus on a case-by-case basis, I would say.
I'd be interested in hearing more about privacy in the archival files.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What could be necessary for privacy's sake?
Well, we take in all of the permanent records of other federal agencies. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of information that when it was held by the agencies may not have been released under FOIA. You would have done an Exemption 6 balancing test, weighed the privacy interest of the individual's information in the files against the need to know what the government was up to. And you might have withheld a lot of things for example, we have Railroad Retirement Board records, which are individual case files of retirees who received benefits from the railroad from 1920 to 1980. And those files would never have been released by the Railroad Board themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have them. Now they're from 1920, and we do release those files, even though they're about individuals, but those individuals are long deceased. And they have a lot of information in them that's interesting to genealogists, to historians. And so it's a different calculus for us than it was for the Railroad Board when they had those records, and that it would be for our own employees' information, obviously.
So there comes a point in time when you can cross that line mm-hmm. between protecting that privacy and then it becomes useful for historical purposes or genealogy or what have you.
Exactly.
Now, turning over to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, almost exactly the opposite. I mean, you're more, let's protect it, let's shield it as much as possible, unless it's absolutely necessary. And then, as you illustrated earlier, release it and correct me if I'm paraphrasing a little too much, but in drops as necessary.
That may be a little too strong a paraphrase. So we have 45 million Medicare beneficiaries active, enrolled in the program at this time, and we get all of their claims data from the doctors and hospitals, and that's a lot of personal information. We also get information from the states who run the Medicaid programs for another 45 million or so individuals. So we have lots of information, and of course they want their data to be kept secure. On the other hand, if I might just quote from an article in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, the title of the article was "In Medicare's Data Trove: Clues to Caring Cost Crisis." That just shows what the other end of the balance is. Lots of researchers, health policy professionals, analysts think that in that claims data, is information that can help us improve the quality of healthcare and reduce the cost. And they often feel that they need the individual patient-level information, not just aggregate data, to do that.
And also at CMS, you have a little added twist in where the data is located, because there are about 40, I think, or more than that, contractors that operate the data centers that are all over the place. So you've got an extra layer between you and the data, that is those contractors.
That is true. There are many contractors that do process our claims data. We have reduced that number of claims payment contractors over the years, too. But on the other hand, we also have many other contractors that perform other functions, such as program integrity analysis or quality analysis, who also need that data. And eventually, copies of it do come into to our repository, our central repository. But you're right, lots of other contractors have parts of those data.
Do you find any value added in having the opportunity then to release data? I mean, transparency seems to be the catchword of the year. Does that help you? Does it give you any more freedom, or does it make your job tougher?
It doesn't make it easier, but it's just part of the ongoing challenge, because for transparency, we have to, again, balance that privacy responsibility. That means that we are looking for ways to make more data available that is, does not have the individual identifiers. It does not have the patient's name, their identifier numbers, or any other facts or characteristics that would help someone identify who they are. So we are trying to constantly develop new de-identified data files that we can make available publicly through the transparency initiatives.
And Ms. Bergman, sometimes NARA is caught in the middle of these kinds of things. I think today there's a lawsuit from one of the watchdog groups that would like to get a hold of tapes that were dictated by Bill Clinton during his presidency. And the tapes were actually not taken by him. I think they were turned over to the archives. And then someone, an author that was present when he made these dictations, kind of memorized them, wrote them down, wrote a book about the Clinton tapes. And we've all heard about that book.
Yeah.
The tapes still exist. Do you feel sometimes caught in the middle? I mean, you can't release them until a court says you have to release them. Or how does that all work?
I think that for us, we do try, and the balancing test is also being in the middle and trying to weigh everyone's interests. What are the interests of the former administration? What are the interests of the public? What are the interests of the individuals whose information might be in those records? So, yes, we do, I think, are caught in the middle sometimes, but that's our role. It's our role to really weigh the interests and to try and make an informed archival decision. That's what our employees, our trained archivists, do on a day-to-day basis for any record. They review records not just for privacy, but for all of the reasons that you would withhold a record: national security, trade secrets, anything that might really not be appropriate for release. And so that's our job. We take it very seriously.
So in other words, you also have the issue of, if you will, I'm making this phrase up, but corporate privacy, because a lot of the things that you handle, just similar to the Library of Congress, might have proprietary or trade type information?
You know, that really comes up, I would say, in exhibits to court cases that we might take in. And those records are handled a little bit differently because they're court records as opposed to executive branch records.
And I wanted to ask a question to both of you, and it's about, you've both mentioned the concept of weighing interests. Clearly, one size does not fit all. Does this put you then in the position of having to look at each on a case-by-case basis and taking the time and parsing through it?
We do that at the archives to some extent. I would actually probably to a great deal of extent.
Mm-hmm.
Archivists review any time we receive records from a federal agency, and there's an indication from the federal agency that those records are not appropriate for a wholesale public release. Archivists go in and they might do a sampling of the records. They might do a page-by-page review. It would depend on where the records came from, the age of the records, and the level of description and detail we had from the federal agency. So we've been doing that for some time. And when we balance interest, that's the process by which we do it.
And Mr. Saunders?
We rely, as most government agencies do, heavily on processes, on standard processes that we can share with our interested constituents and stakeholders and say, here's what the normal rules are. So those kind of cases are routine, and they go through a routine process. For example, if an organization wants to request some of our claims data for a research purpose, then it would be reviewed by a privacy board under a standard process. So where the individual attention comes in is when there's a request that doesn't fit into the standard requirements and needs to be looked at individually and have a unique decision made.
So the takeaway there is, even if there is an elaborate process and even if there is all kinds of rules built in, the idea of human discretion on the part of the government practitioner still comes into play.
It has to. It's
and that's
inevitable.
And that's also true at NARA?
Absolutely, yes.
Sounds like it.